Hello, everybody, and welcome once again to the SAFTAcast. I'm your host, Scott C. We are all stars now in the Dope Show. Folks, some interesting stuff coming up for you from Sundress Academy for the Arts and Sundress Publications. May 15th through the 18th, 2014, it is the International Biscuit Festival in Knoxville, Tennessee. And I know what you're thinking. You're thinking, Scott C., what the hell does the International Biscuit Festival have to do with the Sundress Academy for the Arts? Well, if you would just hold your horses for a second, I will tell you. On May 17th, that is the day before the end of the festival, SAFTA will be competing against not only local, not only regional, but national chains to determine who has the best biscuits in all of Knoxville. And I am not using that as a euphemism. I mean, literally, biscuits. SAFTA is the only non-restaurant competing in this event, and it is going to be fantastic. If you want information about this and to find out who Sundress is up against, and I'll tell you, there's some big names in there, some heavy hitters to fight for the biscuit title, go on to your computer there and go to http://biscuitfest.com/biscuit-boulevard. That address again, biscuitfest.com/biscuit-boulevard. It is going to be good. Then, just a month later, at Firefly Farms, the home of Sundress Academy for the Arts in Knoxville, Tennessee, in Karnes, Tennessee, June 13th through the 15th is a three-day, two-night camping trip and poetry workshop. It is going to be fantastic. Your hosts for this are nationally recognized poets Aaron Elizabeth Smith, T.A. Noonan, Rhonda Lott, and although I'm not on the bill, I will be in attendance for this. The price is $200, but that includes all meals, all drink, and transportation to and from the local airport. Camping gear is available from Sundress to rent, but understand another important thing here. Space is limited to only 10 to go on this trip with us. And yeah, I'll tell you right now, the number of people signed up, well, it's more than one, but less than 10, meaning there are not too many slots left. So I encourage you, be a part of this. Jump online. It is not just necessarily for undergraduates. If you have any questions, you can always shoot a message over to the sundresspublications.com staff, or you can shoot me a message at scottc@thesaftacast.com. Speaking of the SAFTAcast, did you know that we have a Twitter account now? Yes, we do. The SAFTAcast is on Twitter, and you can find us there at SAFTAcast. Kind of obvious, but it makes a lot of sense when you think about it. If you're on Twitter, why not give us a little bit of a follow, as the kids would say? If you are not on Twitter, you can still keep up with our doings and our sayings, and it's not just, we don't just tweet about our promotions for upcoming things. No, we also have other things to talk about. You can still see all of our tweets and everything on the side at thesaftacast.com. And check us out. We do have a feed running there. But if you are on Twitter, we encourage you to follow us and be a part of the whole Sundress Academy for the Arts podcast. Folks, if you enjoy this podcast, then I encourage you, please, tell a friend about it. Tell a stranger about it. Tell your pet, your dog, your cat, your fish. Tell them about it. The animals might not care, but they will be happy that you talk to them. Trust me on this one. Tell a friend about this show, because we appreciate your support as always. Folks, today is a hell of a show for you. This is an entertaining one. This is a fun time. Whenever Margaret Bashar is around, it becomes just a hilarious time and just a ball. This time around, you know, Margaret and I met about a year and a half ago, and this time around we got together and just started chatting. As always on the SAFTAcast, we have no script, no plans, no nothing. We just go at it, and we end up talking about some amazing stuff, and I had to show my knowledge of internet pornography from 20 years ago. And the stuff that made my eyes hurt and my soul crushed when I was just a teenager. Folks, I will not be held responsible. Right now, I'm putting this out there, disclaimer. I will not be held responsible if you go and Google any of the things we talk about today. I will not be held responsible for you taking syringes of bleach and stuffing them in your eyes and screaming, I can't make the pain go away! Folks, it's a good one. Strap yourselves in, buckle up, because this is gonna be good. But first, as always, we gotta have a taste of the theme song. Hey, welcome to the program.
Well, thanks for having me.
Well, thanks for being a part of it, accepting the invitation to be on here.
Well, I am simultaneously excited and nervous.
Don't be nervous. Just settle in. I got a cup of coffee here that I'm just chilling with, Standard issue.
Oh, like in your little picture here?
Yeah, kind of, sort of, but not exactly. No, coffee is the blood that fuels radio hosts.
That seems pretty accurate.
Yeah, coffee and nicotine, actually.
Oh.
The nicotine's... Nicotine shouldn't be there because that's actually what cost me probably jobs in commercial radio.
Why do you say that?
You need the perfect voice for commercial radio.
Oh, okay. You're a smoker.
Yeah, and that kind of damaged me a little bit. I call it the chainsaw voice.
I don't know. Your voice doesn't sound chainsaw-y to me.
Yeah, it does to me, though. It's a good app description of it. So how have you been?
I have been excellently, quite honestly. I haven't, seen you in, a year.
Yeah, it's been a while since we last saw each other, and even then, that was just our first meeting.
Oh, my goodness.
I know. We've chatted numerous times online, but we have not actually seen each other in a while.
That's true. Oh, so sad.
Welcome to the world of internet communication.
Yes. Oh, the internet. Such a glorious place.
Simultaneously the greatest thing on earth and also the most cesspool of Denzian evil.
Oh yeah. Oh yeah. I was just commenting to my partner yesterday that I'll have these epic internet days where I was oh my God, so many things happened to me all on the internet. I actually spent most of my day at my desk or binding chat books, but the internet was so epic today.
How was it epic? Can you give an example of what you mean by that?
Oh, well, it's just, I seem to get into about 5 million different, completely insane discussions yesterday. I think it started with the first one was where one of my friends posted asking the general question of what makes a good poetry reading versus a bad poetry, what makes a poet good at reading or bad at reading.
Mm.
And that conversation went on and on and on. It turns out I have a lot of opinions. Surprise.
Surprise.
Surprise, I've got tons of opinions. And then after that, I write for this magazine, Luna Luna, and one of my fellow staff writers wrote this article about that whole thing where the porn star Bell Knox was outed at the Duke campus by some guy at a fraternity. And all of that happened, and then she made all those posts on XO Jane, and then actually right after her post, revealing who she was, went up, the XO Jane site got hacked.
Oh.
Immediately afterward. And so, at the same time, one of my fellow staff writers was writing about the whole thing for Luna Luna, and so I got into some extremely long and interesting discussions with both my fellow staff writers about the whole thing. And then with a couple, shall we say fine gentlemen who had read the article. And
why not just say internet people, at this point, internet users,
the unwashed masses of the internet.
The Huns and Horde.
Yes. And so that turned into me having lots of opinions as well.
And here I were thinking that you were just saying, oh, I just fell into a black hole on the internet, because that happens to me a lot.
Oh, like when you go down, when you have a Wikipedia adventure.
The Wikia wormholes.
Yeah, the Wiki where you start out at I need to look up a fact about rats, and then you're the Black Plague, and then you're the Popes, and then somehow you end up at
Gabriel Garcia Marquez. Yeah.
But you started out because you wanted to know how long rats usually live for.
I know that feeling very much. I have to restrain myself sometimes.
Oh yeah, when I see myself about to go down the Wikipedia black hole, I'm like, no, 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 no. We have things to do.
Well, I love the Onion had the best description of YouTube, I think. It is
Yeah.
the world's first time traveling machine, but it only goes forward.
Yeah.
Because you'll be looking at something, you'll see another video, then you'll watch another video, and you'll look up and be like, where did an hour go? I have
Yeah.
traveled an hour into the future, and now I'm late for work.
Yeah, no, that is tragically accurate. But yeah, my epic internet days more have to do with like either myself or someone else writes some kind of like article or gets in, or starts a really long involved debate that like I have trouble pulling myself away from certain debates. There are certain debates that like if I see them happening or if I manage to get into them, I'm like, no, the rest of my afternoon.
Like what? What type of arguments would just get you teed off and send you on a tear?
Oh, well, I tend to, well, the, I mean, well, honestly, the whole thing about like when people get all mean and self-righteously indignant about porn, I decide I have to get all ranty about that.
Porn is on your mind right now.
Apparently, well,
Well, no,
what
because of what you were talking
are
about
you
is
getting about? What?
because of what you were talking about with the Duke situation.
Yeah.
So wait, I only know the basics of what's going on of
Okay.
the situation. Like it's been tangentially on my radar, but the problem with me is that I'm wired into about 16 different news servers that I check during the day.
Okay.
So I'm all over the place. I'm focusing right now because this is going to air later, but the Ukraine is happening. Meanwhile, North Korea has fired two missiles at Russia and they fell into the sea. Then you've got stupid internet entertainment news going on that I got to pay attention to. Like Kurtwood Smith just had an interview at the AV Club. I got to pay attention to that. So I'm
Wait,
all
what
over the place.
that
He was the guy who played Clarence Boddicker in RoboCop and then went on to be Red Foreman on That 70s Show. So I
okay.
kept watching That 70s Show just hoping one day he would bust out a line from RoboCop.
He never did he?
No, he didn't. I was just hoping one day he would just be like, "Son, show the man what we brought him for Christmas."
Wait, so how many seasons of that 70s show did you watch just with like that one end goal in mind that you never achieved?
0.01.
Oh,
I
okay.
watched maybe two episodes.
Oh,
I
okay.
can't.
So
I can't get in the sitcoms. I really can't anymore.
no, I when I'm watching TV, I want something that's gonna have some like genuine long form storytelling. And if I can't get like, I mean, if I can't get really good in depth long form storytelling from a television show, it's not gonna hold my interest.
I agree. Or the opposite end. Like it's really short. It's like Adult Swim, like Aqua Teen Hunger Force, let's say.
Okay, all
Where
right.
it's more surreal and it's short, but there's no canned laugh track.
Oh God, no, oh God, that's horrible. Oh.
That's what turns me off, I think, is that it just feels so artificial to me now.
Okay, it's like, and here's where you're supposed to think it's funny, in case you were wondering.
Because we don't trust our viewers to figure out what is funny and what isn't. We're going to tell you what is funny.
Right. The expectation for you as a viewer is so incredibly low.
We just don't trust you. That's
Yeah,
exactly what it is.
that sounds about right. Yeah. Oh God, now I feel like I should be paying attention to like more important things like Ukraine.
No. Hey, we all have our thing. I just try to keep up on everything.
Well, the funny thing is that an ex once accused me of only being interested in two things in life, poetry and sex.
Okay. Not
And
those are two things not to be ashamed of.
that's the thing, like he was saying it like it was a bad thing.
You only care about poetry and sex.
And I was like, well, one, why is that bad? And two, why do you not share my interests?
At least a little bit share my interests.
Seriously.
No, I know that feeling because I'm obsessed with my music collection and things like that. And yeah, my wife takes interest in that, but she also understands there are times when it's like, okay, I gotta put my headphones on and audition this album. And yeah, just kind of leave me for 40 minutes. Let me go into the new Hendrix album that came out in 2013, the tribute on Rarities album. It's like I gotta listen to this and check it out, see if it's worth it.
Right.
And she understands that kind of thing, but it's not that you shouldn't be ashamed of being interested in poetry and sex.
I know, and I'm not.
Good.
He just thought that I should be, and well, see where he is now, not dating me anymore.
No, that is why he is an ex. That's why he has X in front of his rest of his titles or names.
Ever. To everybody in the whole world.
There you go. Take that. Hell hath no fury like a poet scorned.
You know, that's so true.
And that, it is. We are assholes.
We are. We're just jerks. I don't know why anyone invites us anywhere.
I don't know either. Why do people even try to date writers? Because...
My current partner's a writer and I'm a writer, and we both actually, before we started dating each other, had a no poets clause that we broke for one another. Shh, you have to stop talking about this now.
No, the reason is very simple. You date a writer, uh-huh. No matter how good you break up with them, even if it's amicable and you're like, all right, this is for the best, they're going to fuck you over in a piece later on.
Or in more than one, or in like... 7 pieces.
Or books worth of it.
A whole book, yeah.
We will do that no matter how much we actually care about that person. We will still change the name.
Yeah, well, if the person's lucky, we'll change the name.
Yeah, that's true. That's a question, actually, is when you write poems about exes, do you change names?
I do one better or worse. I don't give them names. They don't deserve names.
They don't deserve it. They're exes for a reason. That is their name.
No, or they just get some other title, but they don't get the dignity of a real name.
Hmm. Interesting. I tend to disguise mine, and actually I've worked on a few pieces where I really have to debate, should I actually use their names?
Yeah, no, I just give them non-names.
Just generic titles.
Yeah, they get titles, yeah.
The short hair. You know, I don't know. Just come up.
Well,
I don't know your exes.
Look, how much do you want to talk about my poetry right now? I thought the answer was we're not super talking about.
Oh yeah, that's right. We're not. I was just curious because it's something I've been wondering about: is if you actually use those or do you change details around to protect the innocent, so to speak?
Well, I mean, first off, I guess whenever I write, if I'm writing about a relationship with somebody who I had some sort of like sexual romantic relationship with that went badly. The one thing I don't tend to change names. I just give them like a title of some sort rather than an actual name.
Antenna boy, you know, something like that. I don't know.
Something like that.
Creates a superhero then.
But the other thing I do is I throw myself under the bus just as much as I throw them under the bus.
Ah, so they come back like, well, ha ha ha.
Well, I don't really come out of the poem looking all that much better than they do, is kind of how I end up sort of feeling about it.
I can't do that. I'm God. You know? I'm infallible. You can't touch me. I look at it this way. I wrote this poem. I am the God of everything that happens here. I am the creator.
Right.
The poem should worship me. It should bow down and then attend the church of its choice for me.
You could print out its only copy and burn it.
Exactly. It's like, I'll teach you to disrespect me. Now give me 10% of your words. We're tithing this motherfucker.
I think that's how I deal with it. Like, I don't change anyone's name and I don't really change terribly many details, but I've been told, you know how, like, there's that supposed curse of, like, may you have an interesting life?
Yeah, I've heard that.
I've been told, like, by a lot of people recently, like, your life is so interesting.
I was told that recently, too. It was weird.
And I was like, well, first of all, I don't really actually think anyone really wants to hear about my life. thank you, I guess. But, you know, quite honestly, I'd rather have an interesting life. I don't really see that as a curse, necessarily. But what it comes down to is I don't really necessarily have to embellish very much because weird shit happens to me all the time.
Oh, fair enough. I mean, truth is stranger than fiction always.
Yeah.
Especially when it comes to relationships and exes.
Oh, yeah. I mean, like, I had a legit relationship with somebody who assisted in exorcisms for the Catholic Church.
Like, okay.
You can't really get much terribly weirder than that.
No. Now I'm really curious. How did you meet this person?
Are you going to call shenanigans if I say at a haunted hotel?
No, I'm not going to call shenanigans because on this show it seems to open up truth. So I'm just going to go with that and say, yeah, I believe you completely.
Because that's true.
So you met him at a. You met this person. I'm assuming a he here.
Yes.
Okay, it is a he. Because I never, you know. And you met him at a haunted hotel.
I did, yes.
Was it on one of those haunted hotel tour type things, or was it just, oh, yeah, supposedly this place is haunted?
No, it was more like, supposedly this place is haunted, and I knew the people who owned it. And, like, I don't know, it was...
Turns out he was the ghost all along. He would have gotten away with the hotel scam if it weren't for a meddling poet.
Yeah, he would have gotten away with the hotel scam if it weren't for a meddling poet. You know, there's some truth to what you just said.
Oh no.
There is some truth to what you just said. But that would be like a 5-hour long conversation.
We'll just leave it then that comedy reveals truth. I don't know.
He reveals truth. No. Comedy reveals truth. No, I think we should leave it at that.
Okay, well, let's leave it at that. So this guy performs exorcisms on behalf of the Catholic Church. Like, is he a freelance exorcist? Just goes around, excuse me, do you need an exorcist? You know, hands out business cards on the street, you know, John Smith, exorcist.
Kind of, yeah.
Or does the Catholic Church call him up and be like, John, we need an exorcism. 59th and A Avenue, go. He jumps in the car, you know, in some epic theme plays for him.
Kind of.
Kick the door down and throw some holy water on the bed. You are cleansed! The power of Christ compels you to leave this room now!
Kind of.
Actually, it would be better if you're going action movie style. He pulls a .45 caliber out and just puts to the demon's, you know, to the victim's head and is like, demon, be gone! You got to the count of three! You know.
Well, I mean, I know way too much about this shit now, and okay, not that I believe any of this. I would like to make that very clear. Anybody who's listening to this, not that I believe this.
You're just going with what you observed and experienced.
No, not what I observed and experienced, what I was told by a crazy person.
Okay, what you were told by a crazy person.
if you killed the person while they're under demon possession, their soul's probably going to go to hell, so the demon would be like, fine, shoot me.
Hmm.
So you can't really threaten a possessed person with a gun. Say, demon, get out. The demon would be like, yeah, do it. That's fine.
Your mother sucks cock in hell. Sorry.
Something like that.
That's
a lot. It's not a show for kids, is what I'm gathering.
Okay. So he was a freelance exorcist, basically.
Sort of, you know, jury's out on all that.
Okay, we'll just go with that. He's a freelance exorcist.
Got his business cards to people here and there.
Now I'm really curious about your other exes, but you don't have to get into it.
No, that's my party story right there.
That's the party. That's the one you bust out to impress people.
Yeah. I once won a copy of a literary journal based on that story. So.
I can't compete with that, honestly, thinking back on my exes.
I mean, everybody has their, like, epic crazy story.
Oh, everyone has their one crazy ex that they can bust out, believe me.
Yeah, or two. Some people really go for broke and end up with two.
Or three, you never know.
Or all of them, for the people with particularly good taste.
But if it's all of them, I almost wonder then if the person telling me the story, and they're like, all my exes have been crazy, I almost wonder if it's the person that's telling the story that had the problem.
Oh yeah, oh no, if you have the same problem over and over and over and over again in your relationships, it turns out, you know, chances are it's not all the people you've dated ever forever. It's you.
Yeah, I get a little suspicious then. If it's 100% one way.
Yeah. If it's like all of my exes ever have been bad communicators, it's like, no, you're probably the bad communicator.
Yeah, and you're not telling this story very well to me either.
Right.
But everyone has to have, I think, at least one or two.
Oh yeah. I don't trust you
unless you do.
And quite frankly, we each of us has probably also been that ex for at least one person.
I sometimes wonder about that. I sometimes wonder what my exes have told their, you know, current one or the one most recent after me.
Right.
Because I lay mine out in my work and everything, or I just talk about it on the radio. But but I wonder what some of my exes have said about me and if they were kind to me or if they demonized me. I don't know. Be curious to find that out.
You know, I'm not.
Now I'm worried that I'm going to get a bunch of emails at the account associated with this show saying, you know, I do think about you.
And then you're going to be like, not going to reply to that.
And I'm going to be like, I don't know how to reply to this. So I'm just going to let this kind of fester in my email account for a while.
Maybe just delete it.
No, I probably wouldn't delete it. I'm one of those assholes that still has his conversations from AOL Instant Messenger from like 1999.
How do you still even have those?
I saved them. And then I just made sure that they got transferred over with every major file transfer.
That's kind of impressive, like, kind of a waste of memory space.
They're so tiny, though. They're like, they're not even the size of an open, they're not even the size of a blank Word document, I don't think.
Really?
Yeah, they're just tiny.
Like, have you ever gone back and been like, ah, yes, 1998 AIM?
Oh, I have, and it depresses the hell out of me. Nostalgia sucks. It does, because you stop and think, wow, what if life had gone this route? What if
I don't really do that. I kind of always figure that, I don't know, I guess it might have something to do with the fact that I'm like stupidly happy right now.
Yeah, maybe.
Like, I don't really generally do that. I wonder if life had gone differently, because I don't really want to think about life having gone super differently.
I don't think of it though in regret terms. Like,
just in terms of what if I had done this?
What if life had gone this path? What if this had happened? Huh, that's fascinating. Oh, well, let's go back to what's actually going on right now, which is constantly refreshing BuzzFeed. Please give me a new story. Please give me a new story. I'm so bored. Damn you, internet.
I was going to say, all the BuzzFeed is giving you, though, is adorable pictures of kittens.
And a bunch of bad spelling errors.
That as well.
In the middle of an article. There are a few good writers, though, on that site. I will give you that. There are a couple, like Saeed Jones is on there, and he's a very good writer. And he's one of their main writers on the site. So I'll give you credit for some of them, but I don't need to see another, which such and such are you?
And how I like how in every single one of like the quizzes, you have to pick a Beyonce.
Yeah.
I'm like, why do I always have to pick a Beyonce? I'm actually not that up on all the Beyoncés.
I like a few of her songs. Let's leave it at that. I'm happy. That's my level of engagement. I'm content with that.
I mean, BuzzFeed presumes that I am the world's biggest Beyoncé fan. BuzzFeed presumes everyone is the world's biggest Beyoncé fan.
I can name you three songs of hers and that's about it.
I don't really want to put forth that mental energy right now.
Exactly.
And it's like, BuzzFeed, why is this pertinent to, like, what city I should actually be living in? Why? Why am I even caring what city I should actually be living in, according to BuzzFeed, particularly when they're asking me questions like, pick a kitten and pick a Beyonce?
And yeah, exactly. How does that predict what, you know, how does that accurately measure my interests or what? I want to know the science behind the quizzes.
Oh, there's no science behind those quizzes.
There really is not.
There's none. There's one, each answer corresponds to one of the possible results, and then it's just whichever one you get the most of.
Yeah. No, I that's what I figured it is. It's just a simple math algorithm. It's nothing.
Yeah.
It doesn't mean anything.
And there have to be enough questions that it's unlikely that you're going to break the system by having like the same number of any two.
Mm-hmm. And then there's the other type of BuzzFeed article, which is like 19 signs that you're blank.
Oh, yeah. Yeah, yeah, yeah.
And it's like, do you really need 19 signs to tell you something that you already know?
Yes, like 19 signs that you're actually an introvert.
It's like, yeah, no crap. I don't go outside. I don't talk to people.
And when I talk to people a lot, it stresses me out and then I have to go hide for a while.
Right. So do I need 19 things that tell me?
Right, like, it's a lot of affirmation. I feel like BuzzFeed is full of affirmation.
I think so, too.
It's like, oh, I think I am this thing. Let me affirm that.
Yes. That's a dangerous thing, too. It's like WebMD. Oh, no, I have this weird growth on my hand. It must mean I've got some rare disease and I should be on the next episode of House, even though it's canceled. They should come out of retirement and build an episode around this weird thing on my hand.
It's probably just lupus.
It's never lupus, except the one time that it is.
Yeah.
BuzzFeed has its issues. I mean, then there's the type of article. Oh man, I just had it in my head. Like, 33 things that only such and such would understand.
Oh yeah. And then you're like, oh yes, I am part of this elite group of cat people.
And that only just leads to, oh, I'm nostalgic for, like, the one for college DJs was like, ah, yes, I remember that. Oh, yes, those were the times.
But is
Oh,
that
boy.
to get nostalgic over being a college DJ? Like, is it awesome being a college DJ?
It was.
It was okay. I
It
was
was, at
that was
least on
not meant
my, for
to
my experience, it was.
that was not meant to be a snarky comment.
No,
I
not at all.
came out of my mouth. I was like, that sounded so bitchy.
No, because you can take the strong bad from Homestar Runner attitude, which is college radio can be summed up in 5 words. Dead air, And that's the truth for most DJs.
Yeah, I
For
mean, like
most of them.
a little tiny bit of college radio that I've listened to, like the tiny little bit. It is a lot of dead air.
It is. And then you've got the people like me who, when they got on the microphone, were like, "Hi, everyone. You're gonna love me because you've got nothing better in your lives to do."
And you know what? In college, that's true.
Exactly. I think also the station I was at work too is a free format, so we could play anything we want, anytime we want.
Right. And that gave
So
you.
I got to be exposed to really awesome music that I wouldn't hear nowhere else, because this was well before any type of streaming service could do that.
Right. So you're dating yourself here is what's happening.
Kind of, sort of, yeah. Damn
Yeah.
nostalgia.
Yeah, no, I remember being the first family on our block to get the internet.
Oh boy.
Oh yeah.
What year was that?
Oh goodness. Well, let me think. I was in middle school, I think. So like maybe like 1990, like 1996 maybe or 95.
Oh, right around the same time as me, AOL 3.0, that
Yeah.
era.
Yeah, well, I mean, what happened was we got this brand new computer because like my mom won a new computer through her job. It was this whole big
Okay.
weird thing where the job that she, I mean, she's it's the same job, well, the same company she works for now, and they used to have this program where like if you submitted a suggestion and the company implemented it, you would get like these points based on the amount of you saved the company.
Ah, okay.
But she saved the company so much money that they had to get us a brand new state-of-the-art computer,
Oh,
send my entire family to Disney World, and send my parents on a cruise.
well
Fairly
then.
soon thereafter, they discontinued the program. Yeah, after my, and we like to joke that my mother broke the program because they just used like a mathematic equation and were like, here are your points. And then, like, suddenly they're flying my family all over the place.
They didn't expect that, so.
So they really didn't. They
No.
expected to have to, like, get somebody a stapler.
Yeah, or, here's a dinner for two at a local small eatery.
Right. And I feel like the stuff that was in the catalog for, like, the really fancy cruise and everyone goes to Disney World was in there just sort of like, and you could get this.
There to taunt you, like in the old comic books where there would be,
Yes.
these mailing campaigns would be like, they'd show you all the prizes and the points. Like a BMX bicycle, 2,000 points. This
Right.
Walkman, 30 points.
Right. And then you wouldn't even get 30 points. Like, nobody even ever got the Walkman.
Right.
And that's kind of, I think, where this was supposed to go. But then I don't know what genius level idea my mother came up with. But yes, we got this brand new computer that we never would have gotten otherwise. And so my, and you know, and so, and always AOL was sending out these CDs and
Oh,
everything.
yes.
And my parents were like, well, let's do this. We have this brand new computer that can actually handle the internet. Let's do it.
Let's see what this information superhighway is.
Exactly. And so in between playing Commander Keen and Crystal Caves.
Oh, yes.
Oh, you remember those.
I remember Commander Keen very well.
Oh, I loved Commander Keen. Man, we my brother and I, oh, we also played the very, very first Duke Nukem.
Oh yes, the
The
side scroller
very
one.
The very first side scroller Duke Nukem. Which like we beat. And it also had like no boobs in it. There were no
No.
boobs in the original Duke Nukem. It was
They
almost
changed it all up with Duke Nukem 3D. They reinvented everything.
they really did.
That's why Duke Nukem Forever failed miserably because it was a relic.
Yeah, so
It's like,
sad.
yeah, mid-90s, late-90s. 3D, okay, we do all this dirty stuff in a video game and rip off various franchises. It works then, but 15 years later, the world's changed.
It has. It
And
has.
people look at it and go, That's nice.
In truth,
what else you got?
People would almost have preferred a re-release of the side scroller.
I think so, yeah.
I mean,
I know I kind of would have.
Not going to lie, I would probably play that again.
Probably. So 95, 96, yeah, that's about when I got onto. I was into BBSs, the local bulletin board systems, which were the precursor to the web.
Okay.
I got into that around 93, thereabouts, when a friend of mine got into it. And through him, I met my other friend who ended up later on becoming the best man at my wedding many years later. But round 95 is when I got onto AOL and experienced the internet for the first time.
Yeah, so that was about the time that me and like my parents and my brother were all getting on the internet. And the best part was that like all the neighborhood kids would come over and like mob around our computer
and get to know the four sites that existed then.
Right, exactly. And and we all had like, we all would like fight over who got our, you know, X number of hours.
Oh yes.
Yeah. They, like my parents had a kitchen timer that they would have to use to one of us would have to get off. And it was still the time when like you couldn't make a phone call.
Exactly. You blocked the phone lines and everything.
Uh-huh.
And it became a thing for us young teens. Okay, fine. When my parents go to bed at like 9, I've got it all night. Cause who's going to call my parents at 1 a.m?
I was still just young enough that I wasn't doing, you know, I was like 12 years old, 11 years old.
Mm.
So on one hand, like I wasn't quite old enough that I was like 9 p.m. I'm going to be up all night on the internet just yet.
Yeah.
But I was just old enough that one time my best friend, actually the girl who does all the layout and design work for Hyacinth Girl Press, she's been my friend since we were in the second grade. She came over to the house and we were on the internet and we decide, because like what could possibly go wrong, right?
Oh boy.
Oh yeah. That we're going to type in like ourfirstname.com.
Oh no.
So we type in sarah.com and it's like it's like the precursor to a personal blog.
Okay.
There's lots of like sparkly things
and animated gifs of like under construction and all that.
Animated gifs of like unicorns. I think there were some butterflies. I believe the background was like purple and the text was blue, so it wasn't even readable.
Mm-hmm.
But so that was Sarah.com, and then we type in Margaret.com, and it was porn.
And your brain kind of shattered at that moment.
Well, it was, I believe, the first time that I ever saw like for realsies porn.
Mm.
I couldn't have been older than like 13, if that.
So your brain was struggling to process it, but was also intrigued.
I believe that we both pretty much instantly realized what it was, because she had been stealing her mom's Harlequin romance novels for years at that point. And we were like, oh shit.
Run! We're not supposed to be looking at this.
Yeah.
Let's go to the eyewash station quickly.
Sight. I remember feeling a sense of, like, injustice of the world.
Mom, where's the Bactine? Why? I need to clean my eyeballs.
Essentially, yes.
Ah, it stings, and the stinging is love.
Yeah, so that was the young children and the internet,
I don't remember seeing many porn sites back then. I was about 15, 16 years old, so I was a little bit older.
So you were maybe wishing that you had stumbled upon what I had stumbled upon.
The thing was that we didn't find it through there. You would find it through news groups and such.
Right.
That's how you'd locate it. At the time, the internet basically, as I recalled it, consisted of pretty much like AskJeeves.com and the IMDb existed. That's about it.
Yeah, because IMDb has been around
since 95, I think. 95 or, yeah, thereabouts. Yeah, 93 crazy. Or 95.
Which
somewhere
is why it's such a clunky site, which is why it's still just so goddamn clunky.
It is. It's still, the user AI, the user interface on it is still bad.
It's so bad.
It is a pain in the ass, but it's such a great resource.
It is, but it's clunky as hell.
No, I agree. So I was there at the dawn of, I don't remember internet porn that much. I do remember being exposed, though, to non, like, Playboy and non-Scramble Vision porn.
Okay.
For the first time, and experiencing that there is something out there that I'm not sure if I want to know.
And now you're positive that there's something out there that you don't want to know.
Well, back then, Rule 34 had not been established. It hadn't even been thought of yet. But, you know, yeah, you're finding text files labeled Melanie's Friendly Dog.
Oh.
Or Son of Goat Boy.
Oh.
And, you know,
that.
Your brain is starting to process these things and going, why do people do this? Why do they write these things? I didn't know anything about fan fiction.
That is precisely the tone of voice that your brain's using, too.
I didn't know anything about fan fiction or what's...
You know, I wish that it stayed that way.
I kind of do, too. But at the same time, fan fiction has given us some good stuff.
Like, okay, please explain to me what good fan fiction has wrought. Please.
Timothy Zahn's Thrawn trilogy for Star Wars. I forget what the name of it is, but it takes place right after Return of the Jedi.
Okay.
The Admiral Thrawn trilogy is very good, and it is the spiritual successor of Episode 7, 8, and 9, even though they're not going to shoot him. But they are very well done. Beyond that, and a couple of others, I'm sure, a couple of Star Trek books or things have come out of it to help.
I sort of feel like, though, the quote, legitimate fanfic stuff, like, you know, where, like, it's a novel that they're selling at a store and it's endorsed by whatever franchise. Like, that doesn't count. That's not fanfic.
It starts out that way, though. Some of them do.
Sometimes.
Other times it's, we commission you because we want to write a new story and we're going to hire this writer to do it.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess that, like, when I think of fanfic, like, all I can think of is, like...
Two character... It ends up being slash fiction in your head. That's all it is. Just somebody writing on the internet.
No, actually, what I think of is stuff like 50 Shades of Grey and Snape Wives.
Oh, Fifty Shades of Grey. Even Twilight is fan fiction, actually.
Fan fiction. That's why I said that's what I think of.
If you look it up, it was.
It is. I know. That's why I said it.
For those who don't know, basically, Stephanie Meyer said, I never watched any vampire things. And then we found out she wrote Buffy fan fiction. The internet detectives tracked her down. And we're like, no. Haha.
Yeah, no, and or I think of, like, that, what's that girl's name? Like, Cassandra Clare girl.
Ooh, yeah. I know who you're talking about.
Oh my god, we are going, like, we're going full-on nerd here.
Oh, that's okay, you know? that's who we are. Let's let it hang out. Let your nerd flag fly. In the other room are still my copies of 2nd edition D&D, and my dice are still in their little pie, you know, little tin thing, ready to go at a moment's notice.
All right, you got me beat, because honestly, most of the reason I know about this stuff is because of friends of mine.
I was kind of low on the social scale in high school.
What?
I was kind of low on the social scale in high school.
You know, I was kind of low on, like, the social scale in, like, middle school, but then in high school, I flourished.
How did that happen? I always wonder, because I'm curious now, how does one in high school transcend the caste system and go up?
I almost died of a brain infection.
That would do it.
Yeah. Yeah.
That would do it.
You kind of get a reset, I've noticed.
Okay.
So, like, not that I would say, hey there, unpopular kid, go get a brain infection.
Go play around leaky television sets and microwaves.
Yeah. But that's what happened. Like, I, in middle school, like, my last year of middle school, I did actually get a brain infection from a long story, incredibly short. My basal ganglia got infected because of an untreated strep throat infection.
Huh.
And I spent about 6 months unable to talk.
Whoa.
Because a basal ganglia, it affects your basal ganglia, and your basal ganglia is where your fine motor coordination exists. And so when my basal ganglia got infected, it turns out that it takes a lot of coordination to speak.
Yeah, I could see that.
As it happens. And so it made me unable to speak. I had trouble walking. I couldn't eat. I basically spent, and you actually start to, with the particular condition I had, you have, like, muscles, like, spasms almost.
Yeah.
And it was about months. It was about 6 months of me having to be really heavily sedated, mostly so I didn't hurt myself. And really, like, literally incapable of actually communicating with anyone other than to, like, type very slowly on the computer. And it turns out, and then, like, I spent, and then there was probably, like, an additional 4 months where I was still, like, I couldn't really write very well or very quickly. And I had, and my physical activity level had to be kind of low because everything was more difficult. Like, it took a lot more concentration, took a lot more brain power.
It was like basically, as you said, rebooting your system.
Yeah,
You had to
yeah.
relearn everything that you had learned already
It was
all over again.
terrible. Oh my God.
You seem to have come out better for it in the end here. I mean,
I definitely did. It was really a time of very deep introspection for me. And I honestly think that the whole, like, transcending the social caste system, part of why that was able to happen was because I went into this illness very, very socially awkward. And honestly, the problem was, and this is going to sound super arrogant,
Okay.
but I was a kid who was just too smart for my own good. Like,
Okay.
I was so incredibly, like, my raw intelligence level was so incredibly high that I couldn't relate to the children around me.
I can relate to that, though IQ is no measure of intelligence because it's faulty.
Oh, absolutely.
But
Oh.
they put me. They ended up saying, I'll tell the story real quick.
Okay.
When I was in about fifth grade or so, they ran an IQ test on all of us. Like maybe it was a little bit early, like third or fourth grade. They ran a
Yes,
quick IQ test on
like
us.
third grade, yeah.
Yeah, to test whether you need to be in remedial education or not, or you can continue on with the mass.
Right.
And I'm trying, I don't know the terminology here, and I'm not trying to be offensive in any
Right.
way here. So
No,
they brought me in for the IQ test, and I don't remember much of it except that one of them was that the lady in front of me held a comb up in front of me and said, "Scott, what is this?" I said, "It's a comb." She said, "Where is the comb?" I said, "It's in your hand." I
okay.
think she meant, like, "Is it a where is it?" Okay, well, it's in your hand. Then she puts her hand under the desk. She said, "Where's the comb now?" And I looked her dead in the eye and went, "Still in your hand. This is a waste of my time. Can I go back to class now?"
Well,
And
that's
then the
the
follow-up is that they brought my parents in. And they said,
you did was tell the truth that it was a waste of your time and the comb was still in her hand.
well, they brought my parents in later on and they said, "Your son has an above average IQ." But they wouldn't say anything else about me.
Above average and an above average level of pain in the assery.
So I always joke that my IQ is approximately, if there's a 10 degree variance and 100 is the average intelligence level, I always say that I'm 110. That's it. I'm above average. That's all.
Because that's what they said.
So I think, when I graduated high school, I was in the middle of my class and two of my best friends were in the top 10 because I hung out with the nerds and the smart people. And I probably could have been much higher in my class rank, but I was really lazy.
Oh no,
I
I think a lot
hated
of
high school so
oh
much.
oh yeah, no, I mean the vast majority of school is boring. I hate to say it. It's true though. The vast majority of school is kind of
Frank Zappa puts it is that high school does nothing except make you a consumer or put front end bumpers on Chevrolets.
boring.
That's all it is. So I carry a lot of resentment from high school, and 20 years later, and much therapy, it still has not gone away.
Oh,
Yeah,
well,
I'm now I'm getting a bunch of emails about that.
I was gonna say, goodness, you're gonna get emails from your exes.
The emails from people like, "Do you still hate me?"
Like,
Yes.
what?
Yes, I do.
Send. But
In that
now,
case, I would send it probably and be like, yes, I do.
like, yes, I still hate you. You suck. No, I mean, I had this brain infection, and I went into it. I went into this whole illness, really, like, literally incapable of relating to the children around me, but also with a sort of self-centeredness about it, where, like, I believe they had to change for me. You know, or it just didn't cross my mind that I was socially awkward. Like, you know what I mean? I don't think it's necessarily that I was like, these people need to, like, I thought they should be nice to me. They were super cruel to me, and I was like, they should be nice to me. But there's no thought in my mind that I had a responsibility to that in any way. And then when I was sick, I just spent a lot of time thinking, because that's all I really could do, you know. And there was a lot of time where me just really reconsidering how I interacted with people, because when you're completely cut off really from interacting with anyone other than, because like I wasn't going to go out in public. My parents would offer to like take me to a movie or something.
Yeah.
And I didn't want to. Like I've always been somebody who has had a lot of dignity. Like I don't like to have my dignity compromised.
Fair enough.
And the idea of going out into public in the state that I was in was just, I would not do it. I would not do it.
Mm.
And even if, you know, honestly, all I would be doing, because I could walk at the point where my dad was asking me if I wanted to go somewhere. Because my father and my mother, like, they worked out their work schedules. So, like, they basically never saw each other. Like, my dad was with me all day during the day, and he took care of me all day during the day. And
then mom was with you at night.
Yeah, and then they just basically never saw each other. And I at the time, I didn't realize, like, what an enormous sacrifice they must have made for me. But at the same time, like, my grandfather was dying at the time also.
Wow.
Like, it was just a really horrible time for my family. And
I was
kind of witnessing that, like, because it was my father's father. And so during the day, like, we would go out to the one going out that I would do was that I would go to visit my grandfather. Like, I was always willing to do that.
Okay.
Because it was this kind of odd sort of place where we met, where he was dying of Alzheimer's.
Mm-hmm.
And I was also in a space where, like, our bodies were our bodies were useless to us.
And you were trapped inside the mind.
Yeah.
In different ways.
And our communication was also being sort of robbed of both of us.
Mm.
And so, and my grandfather and I had never been close. He was always much more able to be close with his male grandchildren.
Yeah.
But in like this really sort of like kind of bittersweet way, like right before he died, I got really close with my grandfather.
Mm.
And it was because there was this space where we met where like we more so than anyone else around us, we
could relate to each other.
Was. Yeah. And a combination of that and having, you know, that level of connection with another human being through the suffering that we were both going through. And at the same time, like all of this introspection, I realized that as much as all the other people around me had a responsibility simply as human beings to perhaps be kinder to me, I had the responsibility to meet them halfway.
Gotcha.
And at least, and you know, and basically not act like how they wished to interact was beneath me in some way.
Hmm.
And so when I came back, I mean, also like, but when I first came back to school, it was before I was fully recovered. And I do know that my teachers spoke with each of my class, like with each of their classes, and were like, look, this student has, you know, I could have died. Like the mortality rate with this illness is pretty high.
Oof.
And like, I just, you know, they were like, you know, this is a really serious illness. She's been out for like 6 months. You know, you need to be
good to her.
Yeah. And then the thing is that like, when it's almost like everybody got retrained in a way.
Okay.
And so I was super fortunate that when I came back, not only had I sort of been transformed by my experience,
mm-hmm.
the students around me basically were ordered to give me a chance.
Mm.
And when you come into that space, I think that basically it's sort of like you hit the reset button.
Yeah.
And it worked.
I had a really, really
excellent experience in high school. I had a lot of friends. I started interacting with people like they were human beings, you know, which they were. And I made friends with some of the people who used to like make fun of me.
You know, normally I say to people, I don't trust people on three things.
Mm-hmm.
If they're carrying a clipboard in public.
Okay, yeah.
I don't trust anybody who says they don't like the Wizard of Oz on some level.
Okay.
In some form. And I don't trust anybody who says they have a good time in high school. I will make an exception in your case because of your story there. But normally if I'm just like, and somebody's like, oh, I loved high school and everything, I'm like, bullshit. You did not, and I don't trust you. Get out of my face. And get that clipboard out of here, too. I will not sign anything.
And how dare you not love The Wizard of Oz?
Exactly. You're a triple threat to me. I will not sign a petition saying The Wizard of Oz was a crappy film and I deserve to die for it. Go to hell. Yeah. And no, I don't want to know about the Lord.
But I mean,
if you want, I can recommend a good freelance exorcist.
Yes, you can.
I have his card right here. Good. He works out of a pay booth though, so you're gonna have to find him.
I don't know if I would say he's good at it. I don't know if I'd go that far.
He didn't use holy water; he just used tap water.
Well, then I was lied to.
Be gone in the name of Evian and Perrier.
In the name of Fiji.
Demon, I will splash thee with vitamin water made of Coca-Cola. Ha!
And then you shall be sticky.
Then you shall be sticky and nutrient enriched.
Yes.
You will be full of vitamin B12 and be more powerful than normal.
Bwahahaha.
Mental note, if I ever get out of teaching, go into freelance exorcism.
Oh yeah, absolutely. Just go around telling everyone that you've been endorsed by the Catholic Church. You'll be fine.
Oh, I'll just find a different church, because then they could prove it with the Catholic Church. I'll just find some redneck, backwoods, small church that has, like, 6 members.
Right.
You know, I am part of the Episcopal Five-Handed Face of Gabriel Church. Yeah, they endorsed me.
Sounds legit.
Sounds legit to me.
Completely legit.
Exactly. Now, let me get this demon out of your body. And that sounded just really sexual at the same time as wrong.
Yeah.
Maybe, yeah. That would be interesting. Like, you know, I'm just picturing now, like, baby, let me get this demon out of your body.
Oh, God. I'm getting flashbacks. Please stop.
Okay, I'll stop, yeah.
No, I'm
sorry. Anyway, we got into heavy territory there.
We did. I'm sorry. I took
No, no, that's cool. It's whatever comes up, you know. I've had heavy topics before on this program. And it won't be the last time we deal with heavy topics.
Yeah, I don't know. I guess, I mean, I think also a part of me, because I had such like a miserable time in middle school and in elementary school, I think there's a part of me that is like, this is going to be awesome.
So you're trying to make up for it all now?
No, not now. I mean, like...
You have.
I was like, I'm going to go be sociable and make friends, do things.
I've done that too, and it's worked. It actually works surprisingly to do that.
Yeah, I mean, I guess the thing is that because I then ended up having, like, a good high school experience, but I'm never somebody who's like, those are the best years of my life.
Oh, hell no. College is.
No, I feel like I'm having the best years of my life now, actually. I genuinely do.
You know, I think back, and I do say that college was probably the best years of my life in one respect or another, especially in my PhD years.
Okay.
But I wouldn't want to go back. In terms of age or anything like that, I'm comfortable being in my mid-30s.
No, I actually believe that right now I'm in the best years of my life. I do. I mean, I enjoyed college. I enjoyed college. My early to mid-20s, you know, they were fine. And I've done some, you know, interesting things. But I feel like
we all have our stories.
We all have our stories about demon possession.
Exactly.
Even if
that demon had a name and that name was tequila. Or in my case, Southern Comfort, don't judge me.
I am not here to judge you,
Scott.
Okay,
thank you. You know, that was more to the listeners in general.
but I feel like now I'm in a space where, you know, I'm very sure of myself. I know who I am. I know what I want. I know how to ask for and go after what I want and get what I want. I'm really pleased with where I am with my creative work. I'm pleased with where I am as, you know, in like my emotional life. And in like my, and you know, in terms of my friendships and my relationship.
Just you're in a good place right now.
Yeah, I'm in a really, really good place. Yeah. The past year has really just been everything going more and more excellently.
And that's great.
And so I guess I sort of feel like, well, you know, if I can keep on doing things as I'm doing them now, then, you know, hell, my 30s are going to be the best years of my life.
No, I totally understand what you mean. You know, I'm in my mid 30s now, and I'm finally comfortable with myself as a human being for the most part. There are parts I can improve, of course. But I'm finally comfortable with my physical body for the most part.
Right.
Body acceptance, and that's a good thing.
Yes.
I'm finally starting to come into just who I am. There's still a long way to go, in my opinion. But that's what life is. It's constantly growing and improving upon yourself and recognizing self-reflection and going, I'm deficient in this area of knowledge or this skill. I should improve that.
Right. Yeah, absolutely.
But I'm finally at that point where I can do that honestly and look at myself and go, okay, I'm not criticizing you. I just want to know. As opposed to when you're 19 looking in the mirror and going, you are a horrible, ugly person that deserves nothing but fire.
Right, exactly. And I feel like...
Now I look in the mirror and I'm like, you are a horrible person who deserves nothing but very mild fire.
Yes, mild fire.
Mild fire.
But I think also, I think that as I've gotten older, I've also improved my ability to communicate and not overreact.
Mm.
And so I think that that's also pretty key to... like.
What do you mean you never overreact?
Oh, sorry, I'm sure I still overreact. I had to. Yeah, of course. Oh, you're so funny.
I know. That's why I got this show. They hired me, and the first mantra of the show I put down as the mission statement was be entertaining. Because I got tired of the show. I got tired of all the other podcasts. They're out there of writers, and they're all dull, in my opinion. A couple of them aren't, but still, you know, anyway.
I think that a lot of podcasts about writers, it's just entirely about the person's work.
Yeah.
And you can only listen to so much masturbating about your own poetry.
Exactly. I'd rather talk about masturbation.
Right.
That's more interesting than...
Actual masturbation.
Yeah, I'd rather talk about that. That's more interesting.
Yeah.
Because there's a lot more you could say about that than you could about masturbating in, you know, in regards of work, you know?
Yeah, no. I mean, it's... And I think that there is definitely a place for, like, the interview and the podcast about... one's creative work and about one's poetry. Like, and I do genuinely believe that.
But how often do you get to do an interview where you suddenly get to talk about internet pornography,
right,
the early days of it, why the internet sucked in 95, and, you know, the way to become popular is to get a brain illness.
Yeah. So that's a tip, kids.
Exactly. There you go. Go expose yourself. Go play with a CRT monitor.
No. Just get strep throat and then don't get it treated.
Oh, okay.
And then you might die, but you might also become popular.
You're either gonna drown in the river of shit, or you're gonna go the 300 yards and come out clean on the other side.
Fuck yeah.
Oh, you know. So we're almost out of time. I can't believe this.
So sad.
I know. And you come on this podcast, you're like, I'm nervous. What are we gonna talk about? And here we are, a while later. And I feel like we're only just getting started on things.
Yeah, me too. I was like, what? What, I have to be done now? What?
What? We're almost out of time? What? You know?
Are people getting bored with us? I'm not bored with us.
I'm not bored with us either. We got to do this again sometime.
We do.
We got to chat more. We got to see each other more often. I think I got to make a trip up to Pittsburgh sometime soon. I do miss that city.
Ooh, you do. You should come up to Pittsburgh after May, though, because Dan's moving to Pittsburgh with me. So.
Ah, the boy.
Yeah. Yay.
So maybe I'll come up this summer or whatever and take a trip up there. I've got some friends I haven't seen in many years up in the Pittsburgh area and Clarion and such.
Bring the lady.
I will have to do that indeed. She you know, I don't think I could stop her, honestly.
Aww,
if I was coming up to see you in Pittsburgh, she'd be like, oh hell no, I'm not staying behind.
I love her.
I do too. In different ways, obviously, or maybe the same way, I don't know.
A lot
can happen at AWP.
I'm hoping for her sake, different ways.
Perhaps, and most likely. So, Margaret, before I let you go and everything, how can the folks at home listening to us or in the car, how can they find you on the internet? Are you on the Twitter? Are you on the Facebook? Where are you? Where are you writing at so they can find you?
Well, I'm on Facebook, you know, under my for realsies name.
Right.
And I'm on Twitter at myhyacinthgirl. And I'm a staff writer for Luna Luna magazine, and I write for them once a week, unless I'm at AWP, and then I'm a slack ass. where else am I? I mean, they can check out my press at hyacinthgirlpress.com. I don't really do like the Instagramming.
The whole thing. Yeah. The kids today.
But kids. No, yeah, like, I'm on Twitter and Facebook, and I have my press's website, and I write for Luna Luna.
Excellent. So hopefully, you know, I encourage people to check you out because you are an awesome, awesome person, and it has been a pleasure having you on this program.
It was really fun. I want to do it again.
I want to do it again sometime too, or just to even call you on Skype and just chat about, you know, things that we wouldn't talk about on the air, whatever that may be. We could discuss. You could explain to me the Duke issue, or we can compare notes of why the internet sucked. I could tell you some of the other stuff that I found beyond Melanie's friendly dog.
I don't even want to know what that is. But now
I don't want to either. All I remember of it was one line. And that was somebody, this person had written, the dog wished for a moment that it had opposable thumbs. And I think that's a good place to end it, honestly.
Oh my God.
Oh my God. Margaret, you take care.
Thanks for listening, everybody.
Take care, Margaret. It's been great talking with you. Thanks for being here.
Well, thank you for having me, Scott.
Talk soon.
All right. Talk to you soon. Bye.
The SAFTAcast is a production of the Sundress Academy for the Arts. For episodes and more, visit SAFTAcast.com. Until we talk again, this is your host, Scott C., signing off.